Hello, everyone. This is Grandmaster Jesse Bowen, and welcome to my Lunch and Learn. This month is Black History Month, so I wanted to make sure that the radio shows that we're doing comes back and reflect and talk about what does that mean, introduce people that have made contributions. So it's not just about, about people in general, but it is about things of contributions that have been made that we must recognize. And some of these things are facts you may know, and many of these things are things that you don't know. So our program is about being educational about people. Maybe you've seen them, maybe you've heard of them. We're fortunate that we have a special guest on today. We have a martial artist, a good friend of mine, Grandmaster Dennis Brown, and he's going to be talking about his perspective. He's been in the martial arts a very long time. He's had all these experiences from being a national champion, being in film business, historical moments and things that he's done in his own lifetime to put him on front of the line to say, and for him to be recognized for his achievements that he's actually made personally in life, but also the achievements that he has done to help others as well as advance the martial arts. Grandmaster Brown, how are you doing today, sir?
How are you doing, sir?
Hey, you know what I'm going to say? Better, better, and better.
If I open it up, I want to let you get that in so they know you're always doing good.
I'm always working on it, sir. The key to moving forward in success is having a positive attitude. And in a positive attitude, you have the expectation. No matter if I'm not a perfect day for me, but better, better, and better means, I'm just expecting for my day, my life, my moment, myself personally to move forward and be better. And this is the way we make change, by having, those positive things. And I know that, you've been involved in the martial arts for a very long time. I know that you've made a tremendous amount of success for yourself personally. You've enhanced students all over the world. You have an international connection. And all of those things take a positive attitude, because positive attitude is a part of leadership. So let's go back and sort of, talk about you a little bit. I think you started the martial arts, 1965 or something like that?
Yeah, I took my very first class in about 1965, end of 64, but going into 65. Yeah.
Well, we were just, I guess we would say we were just emerging from one era, as African Americans, to another era, civil rights movement and all those different things going on. And, we're not talking about, we forgive our past and we move to our future. We're talking about a journey and in a path that has created a sense of endurance, a sense of opportunity, and to be able to move forward. So tell me, where did you start when, today we have really nice martial arts schools and they all, in shopping centers for a lot of them. And tell me about your experience of starting the martial arts and what created that desire for you to look at, look into being a martial artist.
Well, I didn't know that I was going to be a martial artist. I just was doing martial arts with a little group. I had my first experience, believe it or not, because I was in a very volatile time. That was the time of civil rights breaking out, and Martin Luther was marching, and Stokely Carmichael was still up at Howard. I was up there with him, and it was just all kinds of things going on that it required you to be very positive about yourself and somewhat militant. So you had to be very careful who you were associating with, because you would get labeled with something. But luckily, I got a chance to work out. When I left high school, right there at 65, I went up to Howard University, and believe it or not, I was on wanted to be something positive, so I joined a drill team. The military, the Air Force cadet program up there, and we had a couple of guys that were in that program that were martial artists. I was living in Drew Hall. They had a Dr. Young right across the street in the gym. He had just started his martial arts program. I went over there and took a few classes. Can't say I took a lot, because the third or fourth class I was in there, some guy took a fall wrong and kind of cracked. I think he broke his leg. So that was only like a week program for me. And I ended up working out with a bunch of guys in back of Drew Hall and different places like that. And, again, you're right. There were no formal schools around. June Reed was just getting started later on in the 60s, mid-60s. But we were just taking classes anywhere that we could at the time. So I was working out with a group of guys on campus at that time, and just reading everything we could read and looking at everything we could look, but there was no formal classes. It was just about us getting together and training and working and getting ready for what we called the struggle, which luckily I didn't get any trouble with, but we were all training for that reason.
Well, you know, during that period of time, you know, the Vietnam War going on, and, you know, the draft and civil rights, and there are just so many things actually happening during that, you know, period of time. Really no models to focus on. It's like you said, you know, martial arts was just coming into, and people really don't realize that during that time, martial arts is now just coming into the country. You know, I know my teacher, they started with a judo book and started reading the book and started learning from the book and started their judo program, you know, up in Ohio, which grew to a major program because they started importing people in, you know, mm-hmm. from Japan to actually begin to teach judo classes, so they would really know what's going on, you know, with that.
Well, you know, at my time, go ahead. One school that taught, it was down in Chinatown. It was a kung fu school. Ding Chen had a school down there. And in fact, they had separated classes, because there was classes for the Chinese, and then there was class you could come in later on for the Guaylos, for the non-Chinese. And so there were a number of guys that were taking classes there. I never actually joined that school, but I ended up working out with a bunch of those guys. I was at Howard, and I found out that right across the street there was a middle school, Banneker, and somebody told me there was a group of guys down there studying Chinese martial arts. Well, at the time, you could only study martial arts in Chinatown and in special classes that were set up for foreigners. And so I went over there and went down in the little basement where they were doing the class. That was my first formal class. Wasn't a professional place like in a gym or in a storefront or anything like that. It wasn't brick and mortar. It was just a group of guys in the basement that had gotten together, and they would train. And so I joined that group, not knowing what I was getting into, became best friends with these guys. And believe it or not, our training consisted of every Friday, we would drive to New York City. They had five theaters up there, the Sun Sing, the Canal, a lot of people know these, the Pagoda. It was a bunch of them up there, and we would go up there and get a bunch of snacks from the Chinese store, and each one would show double features. So we would get up there early in the morning as soon as they opened up, and we'd watch two movies at four or five of those theaters and leave like at after midnight and drive back home all the way to D.C. from New York. And the rest of the week, that's what we worked on—the stuff that we saw in the movies. So our first, our first instructors were really the Shaw brothers and the Run, Run, and Run Me Shaw and Golden Harvest. And we would pick a lot of our stuff up, and then whatever we could pick up from Chinatown. So my first involvement, we had about 10, 15 young guys that were working out in the park in Meridian Park. It's called Malcolm X Park now, but that time it was called Meridian Park. And we would come back, and all week we'd be out in that park, rain or shine, doing the movements that we saw on screen. So didn't have formal training real early, but I was training in kung fu and whatever karate or whatever fighting systems we could get through the early 60s.
Wow. See, not a lot of people really know that, especially if you are not one of those I'm not going to use the word old timers, but one of those mature foundation martial artists, you know, that we didn't have that. You know, I know when I started Black Belt Theater, but you see, those things were motivating. Black Belt Theater would come on, and man, I'd be up all night long doing my martial arts. Boy, give me a martial arts movie that I may never, who knows when I just, when I'm going to decide to go to bed, because I'm going to be into that martial arts movie. And, you know, and people don't realize, I was talking with someone even on yesterday, you know, my teacher created one of the first home study courses, and it was consisted of an LP and a workbook that went with it. So you want to study the martial arts, then that was, you did not have a visual. We were not at a place that being, having visual tools was a thing of opportunity. You know, there wasn't, we didn't have a camera that you didn't have to send the film off and wait 2 weeks and for it to come back. We didn't have an instant, nothing was instant. You know, the information that you actually learned, you really had to hold on to. You know, it's like what you guys say, that you can watch a kung fu movie. You had to hold the memories and the images and all that stuff for a period of time to be able to remember, to be able to comprehend it, get out and do it, and all this stuff. You know, we were not at a point of an instant time and of a time that had storage power. You know, the only storage power you had was actually in your mind of you know, being able to do that.
Well, you know,
so
everything had those. Though. We had one theater in LaFont Plaza and on 21st Street here. New York had 42nd Street, the AMC Theater down in Times Square. New York had their theaters, and Baltimore had one. It seemed like every city in L.A., they had one theater that on Sundays only, they showed kung fu movies. And that was back when Jet Li was just starting with Snake and Eagle Shadow. That was one of the ones I learned from in the 60s. And so that was kind of like our school. But, you know, the beauty of that, Jesse, was that because we only had that one theater in town and it only showed kung fu movies on Sundays, we knew that every Sunday we would go down there to 21st Street or LaFont Plaza, and every serious person about martial arts would be in that theater. I remember Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he was still Lew Alcindor then. I remember complaining to him because, you know, we didn't have the beautiful seats like we have now. He would sit right in front of you and you couldn't see the movie, but you couldn't see. He was so big. That was when we saw him actually used to come to those theaters and watch the movies. But, you know, you were, the beauty of it is that everybody knew everybody who was in my, whether you were in karate, kung fu, whatever, you'd get down there, the place would be packed, you couldn't get a seat. But everybody in the place was studying some type of martial arts, whether it's formally or informally. At least you knew these people have interest in martial arts. And to this day, a lot of the friends I made in those theater days later on, I still know them to this day. In fact, the first movie that I did in China, the people who owned that theater were the ones that were responsible for me going over and working on my first kung fu movie in Hong Kong and in Taiwan. So it was a very close-knit group there, but it was not formal training. I didn't get into formal training until later on. I mean, somewhere around, I know exactly, 68, I went away to work at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base for a number of years. And when I came back, the little group that I had been working with had dispersed. So there was no place for me to study kung fu anymore. I found myself, didn't know where these guys were training in the park. So I actually, in 1968, I went down and joined one of the first schools, first Jun Ri schools on 20th and L. A lot of people don't know that I have my history. He's the kung fu guy. But I actually trained with the Jun Ri and his son, and a lot of his top people were training on 20th and L downtown D.C., and I was one of the first students down there with Grandmaster Jun Ri, studying Taekwondo, and I was there a few years because the Kung Fu guys, they would come in from time to time and stick their head in the door, but they still didn't have a formal school. So I didn't want to drop out of this formal school to go back and just work in the park. So although I kept in touch with those guys and we still did our Kung Fu, I started training in Taekwondo at that time. And I was there for a couple of years until I was still working my good government job, but I had transferred back to D.C. at Army Map Service, they called it then. It's Topographic Command now, working for the Army. And one evening while leaving my good government job, I'm driving up Georgia Avenue, and a lot of people who know me know that story. And I looked over and I saw this sign that said Lin's, which is a Chinese guy, Lin's Karate. I thought, that's strange. It's a Chinese guy teaching karate. But then I saw in little letters right at the bottom window, in little letters it said Kung Fu Tai Chi. And I knew what that was. And I said, oh, my God, I whipped around and went in there and found out that he was running the Tracy's Karate Studio, because there were no Kung Fu schools outside of Chinatown, that one in Chinatown. But he said, I am a Chinese stylist. I do actually teach Kung Fu. I'm just working for this gentleman here teaching, you know, get a job here, work for this guy teaching karate. I convinced him to work with me on Kung Fu, and I became his first student, his first disciple. And, you know, 30, 40 years later, I'm the senior disciple for his entire system. So that was kind of like my first formal training. From the 60s, just enjoying Kung Fu, let's put it like that, just every place we could get, movies, theaters, people we could pick stuff up from, books that we picked up in Chinatown. First formal training was actually with Grandmaster Jun Ri in 68, and a couple years later in 1970, I actually found Master Lin, my current instructor, and became his first disciple, and I've been teaching his system ever since then. So that's the beginning, yeah.
Well, an interesting comment was made when we went to Grandmaster Ri's, you know, life celebration. They were talking about, you know, young African American came into his school to want to study martial arts. And but he came through the back door, and you know, Grandmaster Ri asked him, says, why did you come through the back door? He says, well, you know, this is the door that I'm supposed to come in through. And Grandmaster Ri told him, when you come back, come through the front door.
Come through the front door. Yeah, well, you know, yeah. He was the forerunner. He was one of the first guys to open a traditional formal school. He had a little small school before I came with him. They said it was upstairs on Connecticut Avenue, but by the time he opened his professional school, his actual school, where Jeff Smith, and he brought in Pat Worley and John Worley and Larry Carnahan and all those guys, he brought that whole crew up from Texas to come up and help him to build the Jun Ri empire that he started. And I was actually in classes with with his son, when Jimmy Ri, when he was starting, and a lot of Mike Coles was the first one to beat me up in that school. And I always tell people, he doesn't remember, he was a brown belt, and I was this little guy just joining, but I thought I could fight anybody, and got my lesson, got my clock kind of rung right at the beginning, but learned a lot about martial arts. So I was actually in there with that first crew that he had, even though I tell them I'd been studying martial arts, but I was brand new to that. And so I was on a beginner's level with those guys, and have, again, to this day, have earned their respect, because they remember, I remember that little Kung Fu guy in there jumping around and doing sweeps and all those flowery hands when we decided to do some real good Taekwondo.
Well, I know when we, you know, fast forward and we talk about, you know, achievements, I know you were one of the first Americans to train in China.
Well, yeah, I through that decade after I joined Mr. Lin School, I got serious about training. I actually quit my good government job, believe it or not, at Army Topographic Command. I'd been telling everybody, knew I was a little Kung Fu guy that would be in there running computers and doing Kung Fu on top of the table. But nobody believed me when I walked in and said, I'm going to be quitting my job. Now, if you live in Washington, D.C., a good government job, you don't quit. But I walked away from my job of many years and told them I'm going to leave and I'm going to go teach Kung Fu. Well, again, nobody knew about Bruce Lee then. He hadn't done his first thing, his first movies or anything like that. There was no David Carradine around. It was like, have you lost your mind? But I walked away from it and joined Mr. Lin's school. And as his first disciple, I started teaching for him then. He didn't allow us to compete in tournaments. But after 3 or 4 years, I used to sneak off to the karate tournaments, and I would look around and say, well, you know, I can do those weapons. I can do these forms. I was training full-time then. I was a professional martial artist in a sense, because that's all I did from morning till night, sleeping at the school, that whole nine yards. And I just thought I'd go out to a couple of tournaments and test it out to see how I would do. Well, over the next 4 or 5 years, I went on the national circuit and gained a name for myself. I was that kung fu guy. There was a few of us out there, Peter Morales and a few of the old guys, that we were out there really outnumbered, because that was Cynthia Rothrock was out there then, and you know how amazing she was. We were all kung fu people in a karate circuit, a tournament circuit. And so we did okay. And it was easy to stand out, I should say, because there wasn't that many of us. But I got rated pretty high on the circuit. But then somewhere around when, you know, in that during the 70s, Nixon had gone over and opened up China. And in the early days there, late 60s, early 70s. And when they want to start bringing countries together, they generally do it, most people know, through artists first, sometimes through music. We start exchanging music or art or what have you. And in 1974, China sent their greatest art team to the Kennedy Center, and it was a wushu team, because that's what China was about martial arts. That was their most dynamic art. And I went to see all of that, all four nights that they had it, had a box seat. Again, in 1978, they sent a group back again to perform at the Kennedy Center. I went to that, and somewhere right after that, they decided, well, America needs to send a team to China to represent America. And luckily, I was at the top of my game at that time in terms of competition. So I was fortunate enough to get invited to be one of the few 5 or 6 people that got a chance to go to what they still called Red China then, you know, communist Red China or Communist China. It wasn't just China. And they invited us to go over and train in mainland China. That in itself was probably a life-changing experience because we got there and we were, they say we were the first Americans to go in. There had been some the first American team. There was Anthony Chan, who I know had gone over for a short period, and Roger Tong took us over, and we were the first American team to train there. Now, Black History Month is amazing that we're talking now, because even though there were a number of folks went with me, Peter Morales, a bunch of folks that didn't go on to become big, big names on the circuit. But I got singled out as being the first African-American to train in Communist China in Wushu or Kung Fu at that time. And so when I came back, it was such a big thing in D.C. because we called D.C. Chocolate City then, because it was predominantly Black. And they declared 9/11. See, that date, 9/11 at that time, was Dennis Brown Day. And the mayor and all the city council people all showed up. About 600 of them were waiting at my school when I got back, because one of their constituents had actually been one of the first to go to Communist China. And, again, we could talk hours about that experience, because we were there for a month or more and training with the equivalent of their not just a team of wushu people, not just the equivalent of a high school team or a college team, but it was the Beijing team, which was the team that had won the most national championships of any wushu team in all of China. So it was the equivalent of being thrown in, not with just the top NFL team, but the team that had won the Super Bowl 17 times. But because we were the Americans, and they were telling them, these are the best Americans. They put us with the best team. And, Jesse, I can tell you, when we walked on the floor, we felt like a high school team training, you know, at the Patriots training camp. Because we did wushu, but, of course, and kung fu, as we called it. But we were nowhere near their level. But we learned so much in that first month. We came back to America and got a chance, again, being credited with the first group to introduce wushu formally to the national circuit. So It was big, big time for us.
Wow. Wow. You know, that's pretty awesome, you know, that you and that's it's important to recognize the breakthroughs that we have, you know, being in the right place at the right moment, the opportunity as we look back from Dr. King all the way back to all the other African Americans of what they have created in through civil rights, through inventions, through business, through ideas, you know, through concepts, you know, for everyone to know, you know, about their contribution. Because in essence, you know, we're born, we die, and everything that's in between are our accomplishments and that we can be recognized for. So were you, you know, one of the first African-American Kung Fu schools in the D.C. area?
Well, yeah, I was the first one to open a school outside of China. Well, my instructor was the first one to open a formal Kung Fu school outside of Chinatown, and he was teaching everybody. He opened up in the hood, so to speak, and he caught quite a bit of flack for that, and again, I was his number one student, so I was, they say I was the first one to run a school, but actually that from 1970 until about 1978 or 79, I was running the school full time, but I was running it for my instructor. And it was the only one outside of Chinatown. There was only one in Chinatown in any case, but we got quite a few students. It became a very large operation because we were opened up to just everybody who would come in. And there were students who studied at the school in Chinatown, but this is the first one that was outside of the Chinese influence there. So, again, I got a lot of credit for that. Somewhere around 1978, 79, I ended up opening up my own school. I actually took over the school that he was running because he stepped out of it, and I ended up running that school as the Dennis Brown Shaolin Fushu Training Center, and a lot of the rest of it was history. I was ready by then, you know, to stop competing, but I went on and competed for a couple more years until I went to, I didn't actually stop competing until I went to China in 82. And then, of course, I, you know, you get a lot of, again, remembering that this is African American month here, that I was given credit by the Shaolin guys that they keep telling me that you were the first African-American to come to the Shaolin Temple. I didn't know that. You know, I was there with a group of folks, and we trained there, and this was in the early days, in the early 80s. Again, no one had done that. But it was actually a group of my friends that are now here that came to me and said, we remember you when you came to the Shaolin Temple. You stood out. Everybody wanted to run and see you and train with you. And I said, really? But at the time I was doing it, I was just one of the Americans there who was so humbled to be able to say, you know, we had gone into the Shaolin Temple, the same thing with the Taiji, the Chen Chai Kuo, the Chen family village, where they told us that we were the first ones to go in there and train in Tai Chi at that Chen village. Well, it wasn't difficult to be the first at a lot of stuff because very few people had gone in at that time. And so we were just training and training and training. So every February I get to do two or three papers with the kids in the schools and what have been going and talk because they said you were the first one to do this, do that. And it's not, it wasn't something that we did purposely. We were just studying and it just kind of happened. And years and years later, I look back on it and say, wow, what a ride we had, even though we didn't know that we were doing it. We were just there training.
Well, I know in the martial arts community, you made a really large impact. I think you had, what, several schools?
Yeah, at one point I had up to 9 schools that I was running. I had schools in Syracuse and Utica and all over Maryland and Virginia and Baltimore and just a number of places. Because after I left my instructor, I ran just one school, but then eventually, you know, my black belts wanted to venture out. So I was recruited by a group called Educational Funding Company, which was also a first because Nick Coquinas, who a lot of people know from his days at EFC, he was the one that took Jun Ri on in the late 60s and got credit for turning that into a multi-million dollar business. He took it out of just being a karate school and turned it in and supposedly taught everything about how to run multiple schools. And Jeff Smith and all those guys came up learning with him. And I got recruited to come on board and be his on his board of directors. Now, that's kind of strange because I was a kung fu guy. He had been teaching all of Jun Ri stuff and helping him open multiple number of schools, 20 or 30 schools, I guess, all over the place. But when his tenure with Jun Ri was up, he decided, okay, I can't just walk away from it, so I'm going to form a business consulting group for anybody who wants to run a professional school. He had the experience with Jun Ri behind him, so everybody was saying, if we get a chance to work with the guy that helped Jun Ri turn his thing into this multi-million dollar business, we're on board. Well, the first person that he came to recruit, believe it or not, was this kung fu guy named Dennis Brown. And I knew all about Jun Ri. I didn't have any clue who this Greek guy was. Pulled up my school in the hood with a white Cadillac and white hair and had the buzz to get in because it was a rough neighborhood. And pretty much, to make a long story short, came in and said, I'd like to come in and bring you on board and help to consult your school. And I think I could do the same thing with you because you have quite a name within this area. Well, I didn't take him on. I told myself, you can't afford this guy. Are you kidding me? He's already in Cadillac, and you still riding around in your Volkswagen. But what did happen, he decided that I'm going to do this instead. I'm going to form a business consulting group for anybody that wants to come into martial arts. And I was put on the first one recruited for is on his board of directors. And even to this day, they still have me listed at the top of his list of his board of directors for educational funding company. So again, I slipped into another first there because for years I was the only African American on his board of directors. I was definitely the first, but the only one for maybe 10 years. But I got the chance to sit at his feet and learn just everything about the business of martial arts. Because, you know, we thought the business of martial arts was a dirty word. I mean, if you were a serious martial artist, you weren't in it for the money. Well, you had to be in for the money if you were going to run a school where you had to pay rent. So you had to run a good school. But I learned everything I think that I could about running the operation of multiple schools and just running good programs and putting together curriculum and marketing and just everything there is to learn. I attribute to that young man who's passed now, but he was kind of like my father for many, many years. I still, you know, revere him and the organization. So, again, that was a first for me because I got a chance to learn from the group. And everybody from Kovar to just everybody that's out there, Steve Oliver, Jeff, that out there pushing the art now, all learned from the same person. And I was one of the first people recruited on his board of directors. So, again, I stumbled into a lot of firsts, whether it was movies or what have you, but it was kind of because of the martial arts. I didn't go out to be a first or to look for a first. It's just that we were doing very few things at that time. So I jumped out and tried a lot of stuff, and therefore I was the first one to try so many things. So, I got a chance to sit on his board of directors also. Led me to multiple schools because that's what everybody was doing then. Whoever died with the most schools won. You know, that was I'm like you now. I wanted just one or two really nice schools. I'm happy to say there's at least 12 or 13 really successful schools here in the D.C. area, martial arts kung fu schools, that are doing really well that are all my black belts. And they have their own operations. Some of them have multiple schools. And they're not my schools. It's not a chain of Dennis Brown schools. Never had a desire to do that after the first time that I went through it. But just so proud of the influence that I had on them because it means I must have been doing something right when I look in the mirror because I influenced them to go into the business of it. So they decided not just to be martial arts but to impact other people. And now they have groups and groups of black belts of their own. And, again, I'm one of those guys, I don't have 10 chain schools in my chain of Dennis Brown schools. I no longer have a desire to do that. But I'm just proud to reach, look around the country, and I have people all over the world. I mean, even in Israel, I have one of my black belts that's running an operation there. So it's been a ride, Jesse. You know, and again, it's not something you set out to do. You just look back over your years and you realize that, wow, people start saying you've done some things. And for me, for many years, that's all I would say. Says, you know, can you tell us about your career? And I'd just smile and say, well, all you need to know is that I've been some places, I've done some things, and, you know, I've been around the world because of this martial arts. I mean, I was one of the first groups to take a full contact group of Kung Fu students to Siberia to compete in Russia, and we were there for a month. And I look back at folks and say, you know, I grew up on a little one block street in the middle of D.C. called Rom Street. I used to joke with everybody and said, no matter, I've been all over the world. I mean, I've been to Israel, I've been to China, I've been to Russia, I've been to all parts of the world. And I'm just, I keep looking at them saying, but, you know, I'm just this little kid from Rom Street, you know, that grew up in inner city, and were it not for martial arts, I don't know that I would have gone to Taiwan or Hong Kong to make movies or any of those things that I was blessed to be able to do, except for the martial arts.
Wow. Well, you know, we move fast forward, you know, and it's been a great honor that we create a relationship that I had a chance to experience the tournament, you know, that you offer, and the excitement and the thrill and all of those things. And I know that you are a promoter and you're traveling all the time promoting. And so let's talk about that experience, because I know there's several, you know, African-Americans that are actually in that, I think, what is NASCA, what you guys are associated with. So let's talk about the, you know, the classic.
Well, you know, that was interesting, too, because all through the 70s and early 80s when I was competing, there was no North American Sports Karate League, NASCA, we call it. It was just the Karate Illustrated A-rated circuit, and everybody wanted to compete on that. Everybody from Billy Blanks to Nasty Anderson to Chuck, anybody who was anybody competed on that national circuit. Well, it's kind of strange that when I, the same year that I got recruited to go to China in 1982, I had decided to stop competing because I had done as much as I thought I could do on that end, gone as high as I could be rated on that end, and I decided what I want to start a national tournament. So the first year I gave a tournament at my local high school, not expecting to be this thing it is now. It would hold maybe 500 people, and that's maybe 200, 300 competitors, but all in, you could get 500 people in the gym is my high school. But I went out and did something crazy that nobody had done, at least locally. I went and got a sponsor's a slit beer. Martial arts tournament with kids and everything, and I got a beer sponsor. And that's a whole other story. But the very first tournament that I gave in the Washington, D.C. area, it wasn't rated anything. It was just Dennis Brown's tournament. But everybody had Condi's tournament or Reeves' tournament or somebody's tournament, John Smith's tournament. I went out and called mine the U.S. Capital Classics, sponsored by Slit. This great big name and this little teeny tournament in a high school, and everybody thought I was crazy because they said, well, you know, nobody does that. The U.S. Capital Classics, not capital like the building, I mean like the city, but like the building. There is the one U.S. Capital. And who knew that turned out to be the biggest tournament in our region the first time I gave it. Had to move to a bigger high school that had air conditioning the second year because it grew. But from Linda Denley to Nasty Anderson to Billy, everybody that was anybody in that national circuit showed up at my tournament. Unbeknownst to me, because I had been competing on the circuit, I knew them all, they all showed up. And somebody said, you have as many national competitors at your tournament that some of the so-called Karate Illustrated A-rated tournaments have across the country. So I applied for my national rating, my A rating, and I didn't get it. But all of the national competitors showed up at my little event the next year because I gave it at the convention center. My third year of giving the thing, I moved to the largest convention center in Washington, D.C. at the time, downtown D.C. And they all showed up. And that next year, Larry Conahan, they called and said, you know what, we're going to give you a national rating, a Pride Illustrated A rating for your tournament. And there I was again, folks saying, well, you know, you're the only black person that has been given that rating, and you're now on the board of NASCAR. So I end up becoming the first African-American or black promoter on the circuit. I kind of felt like Dungy or one of those guys in National Football League, being one of the first, not owners, but coaches at that time, much less quarterbacks, but to coach a big team. So I kind of walked in the door on that, and the year after that, we became NASCAR, North American Sports Karate. And so I ended up being one of the guys that formed the actual NASCAR, because before then it was just the NASCAR circuit. But it was a small group of us that got together, and we decided that it was going to be North American Sports Karate circuit. And of those original tournaments that was in that first 9 or 10 national tournaments, I think there's only 3 or 4 of us that have still given tournaments. The U.S. Open, which you know down south, at the Battle of Atlanta, has changed hands, but it's still the U.S. the Battle of Atlanta from Joe Corley, myself, and Larry Conahan, of course. Now, a couple of others were there. They've come and gone, like Grandmaster Sharkey. But I've always felt good. I've been there since day one, been on their board of directors since they started, just like EFC. And so for 37 years that I've run the tournament, I've sat on the board of directors for that. So, again, it's one of those things you didn't start out planning to do anything. And if you had told me 37 years later, you'd still be running the U.S. Capitol Classics, but now at the largest venue that we have here in the D.C. area, probably one of the most prestigious tournaments on the circuit, I would have looked at you and said, well, no, I was just trying to give a karate, tournament, and I'm not even a karate guy. So I was just, again, that's one of the things that's even more amazing, because there was very few kung fu people out. And here I was I was the only promoter that was running a tournament like that, that was a kung fu guy, which led, again, to other things. When I got back from China, inside kung fu, I was the first African-American on there to be put on their cover. And it was because of the trip that I had made to China. Got such a big report. It was a big story when we got back. So Peter Morales and I ended up being on the cover of the magazine, and then years later, the other one, Tiger Claw magazine, Tai Chi Kung Fu magazine, I was the first, and I think now still one of the only African-American martial artists to appear on the cover of their magazine. So when I talk to people about, well, you were the first in Shaolin Temple, you know, Jesse, I always tell people, because I don't want to get jacked up, that I don't know that. That is what they say at the Shaolin Temple. And monks that have come here said I was the first one they saw when they were there. But I didn't know that. I don't know that somebody from, I can't believe nobody from Africa or any of the other continents didn't visit over 50 years ago, didn't come to the Shaolin Temple. I have no way of knowing that. But it's recorded as the first, not the first black to be at Shaolin Temple, because I believe the history of it shows that there were many there. But the first African-American to train at the Shaolin Temple. I like to put it like that to keep myself safe so nobody calls you up and going, that Dennis Brown is the lioness rascal. You know, we did our background and found out that 80 years ago there was some guy that was training there. But, again, it was part of the experience that I've had, and it's been part of my story, if you will. And it's been an honor to be able to live it, you know.
Well, I know that, you know, I'm very grateful, you know, because when we launched in 2016, the Who's Who in the Martial Arts book, you know, you were there.
Yeah.
You were there. We had, you know, quite a few people that were there for a new beginning of something different. You know, you're on our board of advisors, And all those things are grateful. So as we celebrate, you know, Black History Month, you know, I really wanted to reach out to someone that's relevant now, not just in the past, that's done things. And I think, you know, it speaks to the individual, not the color of our skin. It
Exactly.
speaks to the individual for who the individual is. And to be able to move forth and be able to make an impact and be respected. And I think that's really key. That's the tough job, you know, to be innovative, to be creative, to be all those things and then be respected. Because I can tell you about myself, and that doesn't matter, but when other people talk about you or talk about me, that's where it counts. It's not what I say about myself. It is what others, you know, really come back and say. And I really do appreciate you and Mrs. Brown, and, you know, really thank you for being on, you know, our show today. A lot of great information. And everyone, if you want to learn more about, you know, Grandmaster Brown, you can always go and get your copy of the Who's Who in the Martial Arts book. And you can also, you know, go online, because the presence of who, you know, Dennis Brown is as a martial artist is plastered all over the internet. And from, you know, from we were just together, a few weeks ago, at the Action Martial Arts event. And, you know, that was a really great event. A lot of, you know, world-class people. If you are somebody in the martial arts or a percentage of somebody in the martial arts, you were actually at that particular event and being recognized. And, you know, my assessment is not about the award that's given out at the Action Martial Arts, but it's about the experience of being there and all the relationships that's built and that are celebrated there. So that's why I said it's not really about people coming to get an award. It's about people coming to have an experience that are qualified to be there, to be represented, and to be recognized at that event.
Well, brother, let me say this, because I know you, like me, you're a minister and I'm a minister's son. We grew up in the church, so we talk a lot. But let me make stop you and tell you that how proud we are of the work that you've done. I mean, I came down to I believe it was Charlotte for your first event. We didn't know each other very well, but I saw what you were trying to do, and the impact that it had on so many people, because a lot of folks have history, and different folks have done different things, some large, some small, but everybody has a story that they'd like to leave for their grandkids or their family or just for their students. And you stepped out there and came out with this Who's Who Legends, and we didn't really know where you were going with it, who can be on it, who can't be in it, but that very first one, we were so impressed with it. And so proud to be a part of it, but had no idea whether or not anybody would be able to continue this thing, because how many Who's Who can you have? But then we started to realize, we started to see your vision, that it's not just one group of Who's Who. There are people who are becoming somebody every year. Everybody's got a story that's evolving, and each year somebody does something amazing, and there was nobody to recognize them. I mean, only so many people can be on the cover of a magazine, or be on the cover of, or even get their story told in a magazine. But you have launched something that will assure that everybody's story will be out there. Their history will be saved. They'll be able to go back 20 years from now and say, here's someone who you did. I don't want to talk about myself, but you can go there, and he has put it down for history for the next generation to see. So I want to thank you again, because as the moderator of a story, like, nobody, they don't often go back and make sure they get your story in, and you're one of those people that you can't talk about your own story. So those of us who have done things need to make sure that people know your story. So we appreciate the effort that you put in, and I know the work that has gone into every year. I've got one or two years I've lived it with you, so I know what you're going through to make this thing work. And on behalf of all the folks in martial arts that you know, that I know, that you know I know, I want to say hello to you.
Well, I appreciate that, sir. I truly do appreciate that. That means a lot. And you know, as we come to the end of the close, sir, I would just, you know, say to you, from one friend to another, you know, we keep doing what you're doing until you find that you have a calling to do something different. You know, you're making a major impact. I know you have impacted my life, because without having you and other successful minded thinking people, you know, around me, as they say, if you want to know how you're doing, check your five closest friends. And the people that I truly call my friends, and of course, you know, you're my brother, you know, and like I said, I've got those people that I put that stamp on, I call them my brother, because in the midnight hour, you know, if you're bleeding and hurting, then I'm bleeding and hurting, because I'm going to be there for you, you know, regardless. You know, that's more than my friend, that is my brother. You know, my friends are the people that I hold close, will always be there, and they support. And that's what we have to do. So we're not talking today in Black History about, you know, just, you know, recognizing ourselves as African-Americans or Black. We're recognizing our intent and the goodwill to be able to make a difference. And no one can stop that. That's a force that cannot, only the grave can stop that. You know, when we move forward with a commitment towards something, you know, that's why they call us martial artists. You know, we have had good teachers. We have earned great lessons. And, you know, we're part of that warrior group. You know, there's no surrender. We're only moving forward. We find different strategies, but we are always going to be moving forward. Again, you know, appreciate you for being on the show. And everyone, this is Grandmaster Jesse Bowen saying, being blessed, be blessed. You know, have a great life. You know, listen to the things that we're actually saying. And, you know, if you got questions, you can always email me at amaa.whoshointhemartialarts.com or give me a call at area code 919-618-8075. If you know someone that should be on our show, this here program, it supports our book as being informative. And we just started a new Who's Who directory online. You know, it's free for you to join and put your bio information up there and be a part of what we're doing. We're really trying to make an impact and difference as we open up our university this upcoming year, where you'll get a chance to really train in the business of the martial arts, be able to get your bachelor's degree in the martial arts, or you'll be able to get your associate degree, which is our program director program, to be able to do. So we just got a whole lot of things that we're trying to move forward to educate and to make life better. But, hey, this is Grandmaster Jesse Bowen saying thank you, everyone, for listening to our call. We have had the dynamic and the amazing Grandmaster Dennis Brown on our call. And again, sir, I do appreciate you. And everyone, be blessed. And...